Hello, and welcome to Speaking Volumes, the radio book group for everyone who enjoys reading and talking about books. We are a production of Audio Journal. This program is funded in part by the Greater Worcester Community Foundation and by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome, and if you're one of our regular members, welcome back. Audio Journal is a radio reading service intended for a print-impaired audience. Material is selected with the interests of its audience in mind and with the goals of informing and entertaining. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinion of the Audio Journal, its board of directors, or staff. The opinions are ours alone. There are seven of us gathered around the table in the studio tonight. I'd like to welcome Susan Robsky, Steve Robsky, Stacy Lanier, Tricia Droney, and Peter Welsh, and Carla McCullough. My name is Carol Sarifkan. Our book tonight is Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe by Fanny Flagg. We hope you'll join the conversation, too. The phone number to call is 508-373-2343. I'll repeat that again. The number in the studio is 508-373-2343. Feel free to jump in with a phone call anytime. Steve is going to start us off with a summary of the book, and then we'll share our impressions and launch into our discussion. Steve?
Hi. Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe is a 1987 novel by American author Fanny Flagg. Set in Alabama, it weaves together the past and the present through a blossoming friendship between Evelyn Couch, a middle-aged housewife, and Annie Threadgood, an elderly woman who lives in a nursing home. Every week, Evelyn visits Ninny, who recounts stories of her youth in Whistle Stop, Alabama, where her sister-in-law, Iggy, and her friend, Ruth, ran a cafe. These stories, along with Ninny's friendship, enable Evelyn to begin a new, satisfying life while allowing the people of the stories of Ninny's youth to live on.
Thanks, Steve. A few months ago, we read This Is Happiness, and we all enjoyed the richness of Irish storytelling. And I feel like here we have again another culture of storytellers. These are Southern storytellers in the South of America, and I listened to the audiobook and was so pleased that I did, because again, I just enjoyed the use of language, just the humor in the language, the crazy nicknames that everybody had. It was just wonderful storytelling. Not a great deal of plot, but moves along from one chapter to the other. We're going to go around the table. Peter, I'd like to hear what you thought about it.
I don't have a Southern gene in my body. Although I had an uncle who was from Mississippi, but he was not a blood relative. But aside from that, zero. But I've been to Birmingham before. I've been all through the South. It took me a while to get into this book, but in the end, I loved it. I totally loved it. It was great stories. There are many, many moving parts and relationships that I found, particularly between whites and blacks, and how they related to each other from respect or disrespect. But it was fascinating. And I gotta say, I don't eat this diet. I could live on it. But I'm not going to. But that's I love the book. It took a while, but it was a wonderful book.
Carla, your turn.
I enjoyed the stories. I liked the relationship in particular between Ninny and Evelyn. I think those were my favorite parts when she went to visit. I enjoyed visiting with them. I loved, it's so minor, but I loved the Weems Weekly. Oh, here comes another one. I love the Weems Weekly. They just made me laugh. I love the metaphors and turns of phrase, and it was fun. It was fun. There were some characters that I was getting lost, who belonged to whom. But all in all, it was a fun story. I liked the visits.
Okay, Stacy, you're up.
Well, I'm not a Southerner either, but I have lived in Georgia, and my husband's family is entirely from Georgia and Alabama. And so we make an annual pilgrimage to the family home place in a tiny town, maybe the size of Whistle Stop, Sumner, Georgia. And so much of what she said just rang true.
Hmm.
And even if it didn't, if it like crossed the line a little bit, it was totally believable. So I enjoyed the characters.
Susan?
Well, like Peter, it took me a while, you know, to get into it. And I think you said there really was no plot. It was like a frame tale where it was Evelyn and Ninny formed a frame that held the stories. But, yeah, I got into the stories and enjoyed them. The stories were entertaining. The, like, casual racism was kind of made me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I just had to say, you know, this was the times. That's the way it was. And just sort of accept that. Yeah, a lot of the characters were just a lot of fun. And so overall, I did enjoy the story, and I am glad that I read it. I read a lot of negative things about the sequel. A lot of, in Goodreads, they said, don't bother to read the sequel. So I probably won't. But I'm glad I read it. It was fun.
All right, Steve, your turn.
Like Peter, like Sue, I didn't fall into the book immediately. And being the geek I am, once I did fall into it, I realized the parallelism between racism and feminism. Mm-hmm. And as we watch Evelyn grow, just as we watched Jackson grow, Jackson, the Pullman Porter. Mm-hmm. That's Jackson? I'm no, it isn't.
No, it's not Jackson. No. That's okay, just...
Well, anyway, and the difference in their lives... parts of it seemed almost Steinbeckian to me, early Steinbeck. If you think of Tortilla Flat or Cannery Row, and the benevolent person looking down and telling the story. And of course, Ninny was a benevolent person and very, very fond of everybody involved, black or white. So, yes, I enjoyed the book. I'm very glad I read it.
Okay. And Tricia?
Well, I came at it in a more unusual way, in that what I remembered was the movie. And I remember really loving this movie. And I thought, you know, I'm going to just familiarize myself. And so I did that and watched the movie again and really just loved it. And particularly Kathy Bates,
Was she Evelyn?
Evelyn, yeah. She was
okay,
just,
yeah, I can
just,
see that.
She was just remarkable. So then I went to the book. And so it's really a weird read when you do that, and especially when it's so fresh, so I probably shouldn't have. Because I was sort of, it was a pretty surface read for me. That said, I grew up in, for a large part of my life, in Virginia, and Virginians, it's sort of a whole question of, are you Southern or are you not? and those in this book would say decidedly not. But if you lived in Virginia, you definitely identified as Southern. So it was very believable to me, just drawing on my own experiences of, like you say, the nicknames, this sort of familiarity with one another and friendliness, if that's what it is, for lack of a better term. But there's just sort of wherever you were, everybody was somebody you could talk to, and that's very Southern.
Yes.
You know, and today, if I've spent a lot of time down south, same thing, you know, where it's sort of for a New Englander, you know, walking on the street, they say hi, somebody's chatting with you in the grocery store and chatting with you everywhere. It's like, you know, we New Englanders are just, whoa, what's happening, you know? But it's kind of wonderful. It's a very distinct cultural change.
Yes. I read this book years ago and didn't remember much about it except that I had liked it. But at that time, I also read a number of her other books, and I never felt that any of them measured up to this one. They were fine to read, you know, when I wanted a change, but I really think this was her winner, and she never quite... She some of the other books follow some of these characters in other ways, but never quite captured the magic of this one. Mm-hmm. I thought the Dot Weems Weekly was great. Those were some of my favorite chapters. She talked about her other half, you know, right. and all the silly things he did, and yet at the same time, she was clearly so fond of him. And the way she just described all the little events going on in town, it was great.
You know, when we go back down south, there is a tiny little paper for the little community. And it reads not unlike this, about, you know, who went to visit whose sister-in-law in Tennessee, or it seemed so believable.
Well, if you remember, about 20 years ago, Garrison Keillor did the Prairie Home Companion, and he had the notes from town about the young baseball player who had, always remembered, warning track power. And just, yes, it was very interesting. One other thing I didn't mention, by the way, about racism and feminism is also homosexuality. Just how easily everybody accepted Itchy and Ruth. Mm-hmm. And you would think that in the Deep South, that would have been shocking in those days.
It's kind of a don't ask, don't tell.
I found that, I was wondering about that.
Don't bother about it, right?
Don't bother about it.
Right, or you know, they are some of us. Mm. They're us, so, you know, what might be objectionable in someone else is, you know, we're just going with it.
Right.
We love them, so that's all.
And I thought of that, too, is that I wonder how this was received. And, you know, this was in 87, I think we said, and then the movie was 91. And I read about this, that the big difference with the movie is that it's more overt, their sexual relationship. Okay. And the movie was much more, like, you could leave it to your imagination about what, you know, their relationship, Itchy and Ruth.
So they obscured it a little more in the movie.
A lot more.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if you're paying attention, you could figure it out. But nothing overt, you know, just...
I thought it wasn't really in your face in this one. Like
no.
Stacy said, that they were... Everybody knew those people, and it just seemed right that they were together. I thought that it was a surprising amount of acceptance in a small town.
But I couldn't remember. Like, I can't remember anymore. What was that like? Because, you know, I just feel like we're in a culture now that's much more accepting, or at least my little bubble that I'm in, whatever. But what was that like? And I mean, I wonder how this was received, because the, you know, just even writing about homosexuality and normalizing it. I wondered. I didn't read anything about that being sort of a...
Well, I felt that part of Itchy was the fact that she had a female friend. I love you. I love you. I love you. And I was wondering, okay, where's this going? And but she's... My mother used to call me, Peter, you're a toughie. And she was a toughie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was. And she got through it, and she was her own person. And
right.
God love her.
You know, what was it? When she was 11, she said, I'll never wear a dress again. Right. And her mom got a suit made for her to wear to the wedding because she refused to wear a dress
for
the wedding.
I forgot that. Okay.
And that was when I fell in love with her mother.
Yes.
Her mother didn't argue with her. It's just she got a suit made for her, and the seamstress or whoever it was made the suit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So right from the beginning, there was an acceptance there that people go in different directions, and that's just the way they are. No one tried to make her something that she wasn't.
Right. Yeah, that was great.
Well, the whole church going to Iggy's trial.
Yes.
She was with us.
Right. And she didn't go to the church.
Prayer meeting.
Yeah. Right. She didn't go to that church.
Well, as she left the courtroom, I think she said, I don't know what would be tougher, spending the rest of my life in jail or being nice to the reverend.
That's right. Yeah, that was interesting that she, the secret was kept for so long of her helping preacher's son.
The preacher's son, because he didn't know about it, right? Until right then.
Until when it was known that she was on trial.
Right.
It's amazing that he just got his whole congregation to...
to lie.
To agree to a reality that wasn't reality.
An alternate reality.
Yes.
Alternate facts.
The other secret that she kept, that Iggy kept, and I guess Gray, Smokey Gray.
Smokey Bones.
Smokey Lonesome,
right.
Lonesome, yes.
No, that wasn't who I was thinking of. Gray, the...
Was it a sheriff? Or?
Yes, he was.
Grady, there we go.
Is that they were the ones that were throwing food off the train in the black communities in the depths of the Depression to make sure.
I had guessed it was her, but I did not guess that Grady was involved.
Right.
I thought, because, you know, she was just always in the midst of a ruckus or a do.
Yes.
So that didn't surprise me, but that it was him, that was...
Yeah.
My feeling was it was going to be Stump.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Stumpet was such a great athlete with one arm.
That's right, yeah.
And he certainly picked up his Aunt Iggy's characteristics growing up.
But that was a nice surprise to me that it was Grady.
Yeah. One interest that his name Stump reminds me of that little anecdote that when he lost his arm, Iggy started calling him Stump, and Ruth said, oh, don't do that. She said, everybody else is going to do it, so we're going to get him used to it, and that's just what his name is. And, boy, he was accepted, again, like Iggy. He was accepted for who he was. He was the guy with one arm and went on to be a great athlete in town and everything.
I love the scene, or chapter, or section, anyway, where Iggy took Stump to see Eva.
Oh. Most mothers wouldn't do that.
But she wasn't a mother. She was an aunt.
Yeah, special privileges.
Yeah.
Well, in many ways, she was as good as a mother.
Oh, yes. Absolutely, yes. But she was definitely the father figure.
Right.
Yeah.
He had Ruth and her.
So, you know, we have all the talk about trans people now, and it's typically males going to female. But we had very clearly a female going to male, assuming all of the male characteristics and doing things like a man would, including not wearing dresses.
Well, and teaching Stump how to hunt and do those things, yeah. And
hanging around at the fishing camp, and telling lies.
we can tell lies, too.
Oh, yeah. We can, yes.
What was the name of that club they had?
Oh, the Pickle...
Dill Pickle Club.
The Lying Club, yeah. That was fun.
I thought the relationship between Ninny and Evelyn was really sweet as it grew from, you know, sharing snacks because Evelyn was stuck in the nursing home while her husband visited. Must have been a miserable mother-in-law. And what did they call her? Big Mama?
Yeah, right.
So, but then it gradually grew into this very sweet relationship. Not only the swapping of stories, but Ninny really trying to build up her self-esteem build up Evelyn's self-esteem and really serving as a therapist, sort
yes,
of.
She was.
Yeah, just
was.
Really encouraging her, you know, encouraging her to
sell Mary Kay, and in the end, she's driving her pink Cadillac, her jewel, you know, pin.
Just even teaching her that her anger was stemming from menopause. You're normal. This is okay. This is what you're dealing with. I have a T-shirt that says "Empowered Women Empower Women," and I love it because then we saw that happening, like with all of her stories. Her confidence grew, and it just was this upward spiral of success. And that was my favorite part of the book, that relationship.
I really liked that. Yeah. And I liked her ups and downs, like when the kids were screaming things at her and she just fell apart, but she bounced back up.
Because my favorite character was her alter ego, Tawanda.
Tawanda, yes.
We have to always remember that.
She had to channel into Tawanda. Tawanda. What would Tawanda do? And I love that. That was the scene I think I laughed the hardest at was when Ed asked for a can of beer or something, and she was in Tawanda mode and said, "Screw you, Ed!"
I don't know if this was in the book, but in the movie, that the real point for her is she's in the car in a parking lot. Did they have that in the book?
Yes, they did indeed.
Oh my God, that was so good. And did she? And she yelled out. When those young women who had treated her so badly.
I have better insurance.
Yeah, I'm older and I've got better insurance.
Bam. Five times.
And her husband's like, "I don't understand how you could do that six times. What?" I was just confused. Oh, Ed.
You know, one of the things that I loved, it was at the very end of the book, though, was when Evelyn started to go through Minnie's stuff.
Her belongings after she passed.
After she passed, and just thinking what got left, you know, memories. And I found that to be, because I've done that for my parents, you know, and everything else, and you go through, because, you know, over time, you've forget about stuff.
Sure.
And so that's why I've saved everything. But that was very, very poignant. Yeah.
And let's not forget Smokey Lonesome.
Yes.
Who was not identified but was carrying a picture of Ruth. Mm-hmm. The only thing he had.
Right.
He stole it.
And he was the representative of the whole itinerant hobo community during the Depression, that Iggy fed out of the back door of the, well, not right, just right. the back, the blacks had to come to the back door, but I'm going to interrupt because I think we have a phone call. Hang on a second. Oops. Sorry about that. Try calling back again, please. There we go. Let's see if I'm reading this. No? Something's not working. Okay. Well, I hope whoever called will try calling back again. But I completely lost my train of thought about that.
Well, I, for one, have lost some of my taste for barbecue.
Oh.
It was such a surprise when it was revealed.
I didn't like that at all. I didn't it.
But I did love, you know, you can't eat that food. But I did love reading the recipes at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have to try the fried green tomatoes.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had them before.
Season. Have you?
Yeah.
It sounded
delicious.
Good.
Yeah.
I think that certainly my mother-in-law has made everything in that appendix, and I've made quite a few.
Yeah.
It just seemed like
such a
collection.
Hello, this is Speaking Volumes. You're on the air. Who's calling, please?
Hi, guys. This is Rachel from Medway, Massachusetts.
Oh, Rachel, we were hoping you would call tonight.
Hi, Rachel.
Tell us your thoughts.
Well, you got me. Hi, guys.
Yeah. Hi. Tell me your thoughts about this book.
Well, since I was the one that picked it out, I really I loved this book. In fact, I loved it. I didn't like the movie. I really did not. It made me too sad, where the book just, I don't know, there's something about it. I just couldn't put the book down.
I think it's very uplifting. I haven't seen the movie, but
yeah, I'm surprised if the movie made you sad, because this book didn't feel like a sad book to me.
No, it didn't. I agree with that. The movie, I don't know what it was. You know, if it was just my mood, if it was, I don't know.
Rachel, did you read this book back in the 80s when it came out, or is this just something you recently discovered?
It is something that I recently discovered, like, 2 years ago, and then I just figured I would read the book again, and then I'm like, well, maybe this would be a, you know, good book for the club.
Great.
It was.
Great.
Yes. Thank you.
I'm glad you suggested it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite character? There's so many of them in this book.
Oh, my gosh. There's too many of them. I liked Ruth and I liked Iggy. I liked both of them. It was pretty cool.
Yes, and they had such a nice relationship between the two of them.
Didn't they, though?
They complimented each other.
Smile.
Yeah, they complimented each other, I think.
They did. I loved that.
And they both seem to be good parents to Stump.
I agree. They really did.
Did it surprise you at the end how the trial turned out?
Yes, it did.
The pastor really came through for Iggy there. It surprised her, I think. I know it did surprise her.
It certainly surprised me, because I was like, whoa.
It surprised me that they even went to trial, though, so long after the murder. They had no body.
No evidence.
No evidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody really wanted to convict any of them.
But they thought...
No.
I think they thought they could get Iggy to point the finger at Big George. Mm. And since he was a black guy, they didn't really need any proof.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Speaking of surprises, did you catch the last chapter? The two old guys sitting at the rest stop talking about fishing?
I don't remember that.
Not the rest stop, right? They were on a porch at their house.
I thought, it was like a restaurant.
Oh.
Or
a roadside stand, perhaps?
A roadside stand,
yeah, that was it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did people figure out who that was?
Remind us, Steve.
Well, the little girl and her parents went to buy three Cokes.
That's right.
And the little girl...
Oh, that's right.
...looked at the jar of honey with the honeycomb in it.
Yeah.
How much is it? Well... You're our 1,000,000th customer this month, so it's free.
Right.
And the retelling of that story from long ago about the fish was so heavy.
The photograph was so heavy. Yeah. Yeah, well, I thought it was Iggy.
Yes,
it was Iggy.
Yeah.
Iggy, they saw two old men sitting there talking.
Yeah.
Well. And Iggy got up and came over and said, "Can I help you?" And they realized Iggy was not a man.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was a nice way to end it, kind of wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Tricia, was that in the movie, too?
No.
It was kind of a sweet ending.
Not at all. It ended with Evelyn went to visit Ninny, and she was just nobody in the room, and she was terrified. And somebody was already cleaning her bed, and they thought she had died. And she was so distraught. And the room was so wonderful, the visual, because she had plastered flowers, Ninny had, around her bed. She said, it's a way for me to bring the flowers in that I always am thinking about. But it was just plastered. So she's going through that, and she's just distraught. Anyway, turns out that she had taken a cab... Ninny back to Whistle Stop, because now she was going to go home, because she's always there temporarily to be with her friend.
She always said, "I'm only staying until she dies."
Mm-hmm. That's right, and she had died, and so she took a cab, and they dropped her off. So Evelyn knew exactly, and raced out there, and there she was in that long forgotten little town with everything's dusty, and then they had a beautiful. Conversation.
I could see that would be a good ending too.
Yeah. And right before that, she had challenged her husband, Evelyn,
And she said, you know, I want to bring her home with me. I want to bring her home. And he's like, no way, you're not going to do it. And she's like, shh. And by this point, she's
what was that young lady?
yeah, right. And so, anyway, that's how it ended, is that she took Ninny home to live with them. And that's part of why she was sort of being a wrecking ball in their house to have an extra room. So we didn't see that, but we knew that was happening. And she said, how does Ed feel about it? He'll be fine. And they just go back, you know, go home. So
One person that I was very fond of was Sipsy.
Yes.
You know, she was strong lady. Mm-hmm. And she, the guy that tried to kill her,
mm-hmm.
she smacked him like 3 times.
Right. Frank, I think.
Frank, mm-hmm. yeah.
And they, because he had a glass eye.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they found the body.
And they didn't find the body. No. They just found the head.
No,
they found the head. Maybe the head. Right. The head. Yeah.
Oh, you mean in the present or 1980s, whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they found the head, I guess, with a glass eye. Okay.
Yeah, just a bunch of old holes over there.
But I, you know, she was, for what was that man was trying to do to her. It's not the right thing, but she did what she had to do. Mm-hmm. And they were managed. They managed to just deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I found that to be very brave.
Oh yeah. I liked the way they talked early on about how she had the thing about heads, and she kept running outside and burying like the chicken heads and everything. And then she went to get help, and when they came to dispose of the body, the head was gone. Because she had buried the head out in the backyard.
It's fun to be laughing about something so gruesome.
I know.
Right.
That but I don't think any of us had much sympathy for Frank.
No.
And it was not, a lot of it was a very ugly time.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. And the other, you were mentioning feminism and racism. The movie definitely tackled domestic violence. That was a huge piece, and I know it was through the book as well. Mm. But she had a little role, small role.
Sipsy.
Yeah, but she was played by Cicely Tyson.
Oh, I'm sure she made the most of it.
she totally did. But she wasn't, you know, she wasn't a major part, a critical part at one point. But
yes, she was pretty big in the book, at least at the beginning she was.
Yeah.
Where she loved the baby so much, and somebody said, oh, there's a baby, somebody's getting rid of it, and she just took off. I've got to get that baby. I've got to get that baby.
Rachel, I think most of the people around the table here, except for me, read the print version of this book. Do you want to talk do you want to talk a little bit about the narration?
Yeah, sure. I really liked the audio because I use mostly audiobooks on BARD all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the reader, I forget who she was. I have to go back and look. But
I think Fanny Flagg read it. Hmm. Wasn't it?
No, not the one not through Library of Congress.
Okay. All right. But at any rate,
it was a volunteer that did it.
I thought it was wonderful narration, what I listened to. Now, I listened to a commercial recording, so it was probably different than what you got on BARD. Was yours good?
It must have been. Yes, she was excellent, the volunteer that read it.
Did she have a Southern accent?
You know, she did.
Yeah. Well, that really kind of set the tone for me. Listening to a reader with a Southern accent just made it feel more real, made the characters more real, because her voice just fit the location and the times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, when you read the print version, is it written in dialect?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so.
And occasionally, I found it offensive.
Hmm.
Occasionally.
Well,
not all the time.
The N-word, of course.
Yeah. Well, not that alone, mm-hmm. but it just sometimes it overemphasized various.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Things that I just thought weren't necessary to be that much.
Although it was but a good reflection of the
world
at that time, not in our time.
Probably was. You know, I can't disagree with that. But I did. Nowadays, you know, I don't know that particular inflection was necessary. Not everybody talked like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, I've been blessed to have many, many African American friends.
Mm-hmm.
From many years, and I'm very proud of that, and that is not just necessarily part of it.
There was a part of the story where, and I'm not going to remember the characters, but some of the grandkids were mad at the black grandfather for bowing down to
the guy who'd been the porter, the mm-hmm. railroad porter. He's like, why does he have to act so?
Right,
Jasper.
After the long story about how he had achieved what he had achieved.
Correct. But it reminded me a little bit of our book, James, that sometimes that dialect was used as armor, as a shield for mm-hmm. protection.
Darn you, woman. I was just going to say the same thing.
Oh, gosh. I aspire to be smart like you. It happened just this once. Mark it down. So perhaps that dialect was just used in those instances as protection almost.
Right. And that's what made their lives possible.
Correct.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was a shame that the grandson didn't realize mm-hmm. where that way of being had come from.
Yeah.
Well, do we ever understand our grandparents?
No, we don't.
No.
Yeah.
You know, I wish when he said it, someone had educated him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
She covers a lot of different aspects of race relations in this book, including colorism within mm-hmm. the black community.
Yes,
she takes it all on. No wonder it's such a thick book when I look at the print versions you guys have here.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the stories about the way Iggy and Ruth and Sipsy and those in the kitchen handled all these hobos and migrants who came around. Maybe it was the first story when she first met Smokey, that he had the DTs so bad that he was trembling and he couldn't eat the food that she gave him. Mm-hmm. So Iggy took him out back and let him have a drink from her flask to calm his hands down mm-hmm. so that he could come in and enjoy the meal. Mm-hmm. And they had a setup in the bathroom for people to go in and clean up mm-hmm. and wash up and shave and things like that. You know, it was beyond just passing a sandwich to somebody who's outside. They were really taking care of people in such a humane and considerate way.
Yeah, and really treating them with dignity.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of the things that I liked was the fact that many of the homeless men basically ask, what can I do
mm-hmm.
to earn my meal?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they respected that.
They always so tried to give them something.
They did. Yeah. And then they gave them something. And I thought that you know, was
mm-hmm.
that was beautiful.
Was it Ed who said, they just want stuff now. They don't want to do any work. They just want stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Want help in terms of the homeless and I think that was Ed. Evan's
husband. I think you're right. Yeah.
Oh, Ed.
Ed.
Who did Ed vote for?
Take a guess.
One of the readers and pointed out that his last name is Couch, a lot like a couch potato.
Yeah.
That's
perfect. Yeah. There was a really sad scene when one of the young black women who could pass for white went into the store and she was looking at lipsticks and her uncle came in and didn't realize what was going on. and then he ended up being thrown out of the store for daring to talk to a white woman. Mm-hmm. And she was sort of trapped because she couldn't, at that point, reveal that she was... That she was, in fact, yeah.
That's what they were, yeah. What was called.
Yeah, so yeah. Just the whole thing was, it was sad.
And then she never spoke to him again.
I think that, yeah, it did say that, I think. It was just, yeah.
Well, the fact that they were advertising the skin lightener at the same time that Evelyn was looking at her facial stuff, and she said, oh, I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
Did anybody have a hint about the pink roses on Ruth's grave?
Speak more about that. Remind me what was going on with pink roses.
Evelyn went to Ruth's grave, and there was a jar of fresh pink roses. And also a jar with a note in it, like a fare thee well note. Yeah. And the neighbors to Threadgold's old house noticed that there was this arbor with pink roses on it. It was the only thing that was left at the house.
Oh, nice. I missed that part.
I'm going to ask Rachel, have you read anything else by Fanny Flagg?
She actually, and it's on Bard, there's a cookbook, the Fried Green Tomatoes by Fanny Flagg.
Have you tried any of the recipes?
No, but they sound really good. I forget, you know, what some of them are, but the book looks amazing.
Food plays a big part in this book, the way through, but both in... In every relationship here, whether it's the people in the cafe that they're feeding or the homeless people they're feeding. And then Ninny and Evelyn's whole relationship is based on the foods that they share together. Yeah.
Oh, the snack foods.
And the snack foods, yes. And then she goes through a phase where she brings carrot sticks or something. And Evelyn is... Ninny is glad when that phase is over. Yeah. No, food plays a big part in this. And that's a reflection of Southern culture, too, is the big part that food plays.
Well, even in the book, when they have Sipsy's recipes in the back, you know, for reference, you know, after they give the recipe, buttermilk biscuits, Naughty Bird's favorite, whoever Naughty Bird is, skillet cornbread, so good it will kill you. Yeah. You know, like that. It's even in the recipe.
Even in the recipes, there's that humor.
Yeah. I like this one. Sipsy Southern Fried Chicken. So long, Mr. Chicken. And you're like, so silly.
I have to go back about 60 years. Oh, dear, 60. In the 1960s, it was a television show starring Patty Duke. And it was the Patty Duke Show, where she played herself, a teenage girl, and her cousin. Yeah. Their cousins, identical cousins. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters was from England and very refined. And Patty loved rock and roll, and a hot one made her lose control. But there was one episode where Patty got involved with a vanity publisher. And she wrote this story, and he said, you know what it really needs? It needs some recipes at the end. Books with recipes always sell. Yes, it's horrible to waste our brain cells on.
I'll sing the jingle from the show.
Fried Green Tomatoes, I want to try.
Yes.
I could sing it for you, but I won't.
I just finished reading the book. I was trying to look up the author, Kin by Tayari Jones. Has anyone seen this book or read this? If you liked it had the issues of colorism in it and just race relations and some homosexuality in relationships, and it was wonderful, wonderfully written. So if you liked a little bit of that in this book, Kin by Tayari Jones. I just finished reading it. It was an Oprah Book Club pick, and it was 5 stars in my book. It was very, very well written.
Great.
So just if you like this, maybe your next read could be Kin. Excellent. Yeah.
I knew the name Fanny Flagg from this book, but I did not realize that she had had a whole acting career before
this. That's
where
I knew
this.
Her from. Was, yeah, she was a comedian, too.
Well,
right.
She started out on The Match Game on TV, going way back then.
Is that
and,
right?
And then she was on Broadway. She was in movies, and not in small parts. But she always loved to write, and I found an interview with her, and at this she says, "I always wanted to be a writer so much, and I'm glad I did. Basically, I have much more of a writer's personality than a performer's personality. Yet I was performing, and I never felt quite right about it. I didn't seem to have that fire in the belly. It was like I was just making a living. I remember I was on Broadway doing The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. I was playing the lead, and I remember going to work in February. It was freezing in New York. I went to work and got to the dressing room, was putting on my false eyelashes and pulling the rollers out of my hair. I was crying because it was so cold and I was so miserable. I looked at myself in the mirror and thought, what are you doing? You're not enjoying this, and that's terrible. You're taking a job away from an actress that would just love to be doing this, and you're just doing it to make a living. So I made a decision that I wasn't going to do that. I gave my notice, and I started writing full time. And you know what? It was the right thing to do, honey.
Honey.
Yeah. Honey. Yeah, it's interesting that one of the stories, the anecdotes, I suppose it's true, is that when she was on The Match Game, I don't remember the game very well, but they wrote their answers, and she misspelled things all the time. Hmm. And a viewer wrote to her and said, I think you have dyslexia, which was a new term back in the day. That was a long time ago. And they were just beginning to understand it. And she did, and she learned how to cope. Once she had a name for it, she learned what it was and how to cope with it. She was able to write.
It's so interesting.
Wow.
That's
wonderful.
A great story.
It's one thing to be able to write, but then to write books.
Yes.
You know, that's another whole level.
And,
I mean,
and
my
long,
Lord.
Complicated books
exactly.
With all these characters.
Exactly. That's incredible.
I'll tell you a little bit more from that interview with her. And this goes back to the culture of the Southerners. To me, the thing that's most interesting about Southerners is that everybody's a character. There are just no dull people. They're hilarious. I love the way they use the language. They love to talk. You just don't find that in other parts of the country. When I go home, I can talk for 2 hours with a total stranger. Mm-hmm. They'll just tell you everything you want to know. They just love to talk to visit with one another, love their neighbors and community. It's just a whole different part of the country. We all speak English. But we have different cultures everywhere, and the Southern culture is just different from the culture in New Hampshire or New England or California. Of course, being a Southerner, I relate to Southerners. Being a Southerner has been one of the joys of my life because no matter where I go, if I hear that accent, I've got a friend. I can walk up to them and say, "Where are you from?" They'd tell me and ask where I'd from. I'd say, I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. And then you've got a conversation because we relate to one another.
That's wonderful. That's so true.
And actually, that's one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed was when Evelyn went out to the diet camp.
Yes, that was.
Okay, and everybody thought she was a hoot because of the way she talked and everything else. And then she got the letter and then came back to get together with Ninny. And but that was beautiful part.
Mm-hmm. Right, she said, "I finally found my people."
Yes, yay. Yeah, yes. Yeah. When she headed out to that fat camp, I thought, oh, this is not going to go well. But in fact, it did. It really turned her life around in so many ways. What a surprising success story to come out of that.
Female friendships are so important.
There you go.
Female friendships need to lift each other up.
It was really building on that scene where she went to the black church.
Yes, right.
Because she wanted to feel a sense of community. And she loved the way, from her perspective, you know, Black people were always kind of taking care of, you know, they had something mm-hmm. in common.
But she was welcomed, too.
Oh, yes.
Yes, she, yeah, she was.
Very well welcomed there.
But she knew that those weren't her people.
But she wanted that kind of community, mm-hmm. yes. And surprisingly found it at the Fat Camp in California.
I remember when my son was in high school and Blues Brothers came out. Mm-hmm. And if you remember early in the movie, it's a James Brown church.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he said, do they really have churches like that? I said, well, not New England.
Well, that's probably true. It was not easy to find reviews of this book because it was written so long ago. You
right.
know, you'd have to really go dig in some archives. But I did read one person who read it recently, and just the one line, like the best kind of country song, Fried Green Tomatoes is knowingly sentimental, but also inspirational and warm. So thank you, Rachel. You suggested a book that we all enjoyed very much, and I hope you'll keep listening
boy.
And keep calling in and keep giving us ideas.
Thank you, Rachel.
I certainly will
thank
keep
you.
Calling.
You're receiving a round of applause, Rachel.
That applause is for you, Rachel. Yeah. Take care now.
Thank you, guys. Okay, love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. There. I hope other listeners will get the idea of sending us a good idea for a book and then calling in to share your thoughts on it, because we surely do appreciate it. I want to let people know some of the things that are coming up. I'll remind you that our Speaking Volumes, you know, is broadcast live on the first Tuesday of the month. I want you to also know that it's repeated each Tuesday at 6 o'clock and Wednesdays at midnight. So you've got several chances to catch an episode if you miss us live. If you'd like to get a monthly email reminder before each broadcast, send us your email. Send it to info@audiojournal.org, and we'll get you on that list. It's a short little list, but I try to remember to send a reminder out each month. So, what's coming up next? On June 2nd, we're going to read Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. On July 7th, we're going to read Say Nothing, A True Story of Murder and Memory in Northern Ireland. We love hearing from our listeners, so if you have a book recommendation to pass along or a comment about the book we're discussing next, you can call the office at 508-752-0557 or email us again at info@audiojournal.org. So, next month, Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. Former scholarship student Lillian lost touch with her wealthy boarding school roommate, Madison, until Madison reaches out to ask for help with her twin stepchildren. Lillian agrees to be their caretaker, but there's a catch. The children spontaneously combust when they're upset. Now, I'm looking at you, Carla, because I think you're the one responsible for this recommendation.
I am. Walking past the bookshelf with a child from the waist up just exploded in flame. I said, well, I have to read this one. So it was delightful.
Oh,
I'm
good.
I'm a big Kevin Wilson fan. Quirky man. So,
well, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Speaking Volumes has been a production of Audio Journal. Our program has been archived and can be easily accessed by visiting our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Thanks tonight to Susan Robsky, Stephen Robsky, Tracy Lanier, Tricia Droney, Peter Welsh, and Carla McCullough. My name is Carol Sarafkhan. Thank you so much for listening.
Did you know that there are many different ways to listen to Audio Journal? You can go to our website, audiojournal.org, and stream us live. Or you can install the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. Or you can tell your smart speaker to play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or you can dial us at 1-712-770-1043 on your telephone. Or you can turn on your local cable access TV station. You can check our website, audiojournal.org, for the correct channel for your town. And finally, you can use one of our special receivers tuned to Audio Journal's frequency. And if you missed your favorite program, go to our website or the Audio Journal app and listen to podcasts of previously aired programs. Now, if you need assistance with any of these listening methods, please contact us at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
This is Bird Note.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find
Birds
out if they're eligible to register for service.
Sounds, from squawks to chirps to warbles, and they can have different meanings. When you're first starting to bird by ear, it can be helpful to learn the difference between songs and calls. Birds produce songs to establish territory, attract a mate, and fend off rivals. They're more frequently performed by males during the breeding season, but many species sing year-round, and some female birds sing too. For example, male and female northern cardinals produce a song with clear whistles. Songs can also be dry and mechanical, like this chipping sparrow's. Or jumbled and metallic, like this great-tailed grackle's. For everything else they need to say, birds use calls. Contact calls help birds stick together while foraging or traveling. This American goldfinch makes a flight call to let the flock know he's still with the group. When there's danger nearby, black-capped chickadees make a distinctive alarm call. In fact, chickadee alarm calls are understood by dozens of other species, including birds and birders. For Bird Note, I'm Joni Franklin. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.